Sometimes it can feel like food has an emotional control over you. Well, it's time to show your food who's boss with Noom. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bat Flip, episode 87. Going to recap your week 11 fab action in the NFBC, take some listener questions, and much, much more as always. You can find myself on Twitter at BDIntric. And my co-host as always, well, mostly always, he took the week off last week because he had, I don't blame him. He went to an awesome place in Alaska. Don't blame him at all. No judgment here. I saw the desserts he made. I saw all the good stuff. Plus, he got the pinch hit on the probably best podcast in the world. So he's kind of a world star now. I'm surprised he came back to the show. You can find him on Twitter at Bat Flip Crazy. Toby, how we doing, man?
Bubba, I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm kind of a big deal. had a great week. I'm as Bubba mentioned, I'm very lucky. My family lives in a beautiful place in Sitka, Alaska. If anybody's been there before, a town of about 8,000 people. In Southeast Alaska, right there on the water, mountains, everything, you name it. It's just a beautiful place to go and visit. So really lucky to do that for a week and kind of get away and kind of refresh, which was really nice. And then I got home on Saturday night, super late. And then on Sunday, I was very fortunate to be invited to guest host when Jeff Erickson was out of town for the MLB RotoWire podcast on Sunday night with Scott Jenstedt. So that was really cool. Really nice of Scott to reach out. Very flattered that he did that. But yeah, I'm back, refreshed. You know, everything's going well. All the teams are like slowly creeping and crawling forward. You know, last week it was like I was mid 200s. This week I'm low 200s to high 100s. You know, so slowly but surely we're gonna make a run at third place in at least one league. So we'll see what happens. But everything's good. Obviously, like a tough week, I think, in baseball overall with, you know, not only the injuries like Glasnow, but just MLB shooting itself in the foot again, over and over and over again, so that the discussion isn't about these great pitchers or these great hitters or the generational talents we have that are like 21 years old, 22 years old, you know, it's about how players are cheating again, you know, so frustrating on that level, but we move along. How are you doing?
I'm good, and it is very frustrating because, like you said, they're highlighting it as baseball is cheating. Not that, you know, baseball, not that players are innovative and trying to better themselves against the target because you let them do this. Like, let's look at the big picture of, like, this is steroids all over again. This was on your watch. Like, this is what you did. You wanted this. Now you got it. Here you go. Like, it's very, very simple stuff. And it's really interesting. If they just asked the players or some people involved how to fix this, it'd be so much better. Like Jeremy Blevins put out a tweet today. I had MLB Moving Average on last week, and he's done a ton of research on it. And he talked to like some of the best minds that I totally forget their names. The female doctor that did the research on the different types of baseballs.
Meredith.
Wills, I think. Yeah, I'm horrible with names. Like I apologize now. And then I think the gentleman that does the sim shape the seam shifted wake Barton, he talked to him and some other people, and they talked about how even like in a dozen baseballs, not one baseball is the same. They all feel different, they're all sized different, the seams are all different. So that's part of the reason they use, like, even if it's just sunscreen and pine tar, strictly for grip. And that's what like Glasnow talked about. He's like, I'm not using this stuff for the spin. I'm using it just so when you give me a cue ball, I can grip the baseball. Like, it's that simple. I'm not doing anything else to do it. Where some guys are, it's very evident. Like, Eno Saris, I haven't read the whole article, but he came out with an article at The Athletic highlighting all the guys with changes. And he says it's like 44 people have checked out, but it's only like 11 of them that have had massive changes. The rest of them are all within one standard deviation. So that can be minimal. That can be just changing temperature. It's getting warm. Like, that's easy to do. But there's a handful that are kind of like, okay, let's watch this. It's just a shame, like you said, is baseball shooting themselves in the foot. I have the Sunday morning news on in the background this past weekend as we're doing stuff around the house, and Jeff Passan's on talking about cheating in baseball. Not these great players in baseball on national news. They're talking about cheating in baseball. And it's just
not Vlad Jr., who we all want to hear about, right?
Vlad, Tatis, any of the like dozens and dozens of young stars that could just highlight this game for years to come. We're talking about cheating in baseball. I tweeted it out today, and it's sadly, I think, going to come true. Is I already thought, I had a really good hunch, I'm not the only one, that there's going to be a labor shortage. There's going to be a strike. It's not going to be pretty, and it might be long. This is going to make it worse. It's going to make it very bad because what it will be is the players are getting pinpointed as cheaters. So that's going to be a whole other argument at the table. Like, we already had enough problems. Now they threw this into the mix. It's going to be bad. So let's enjoy this fantasy baseball season for even the injuries and everything it is, because next year might be short if we better get something. That's all I got to say. But it has the feelings of something bad's coming, like bad's coming. So let's enjoy this season.
Yeah, and it's tough because it's the same thing that happened with steroids, like you mentioned before, where it's like you have guys who are competing, and it probably starts with one or two guys who start using substances or like the sticky tack or whatever it is, and they're doing really well. And baseball knows that it's happening, right? It's not like it was an open and secret. So
They were encouraging more.
Exactly. they're doing this. And so in order for everybody to keep up, they've got to do it, just like with steroids, right? It wasn't just batters that were on steroids either, right? It was pitchers. We know that, right? So everybody was on it. And so it encourages that to happen. And then you change it mid-season on these guys. And again, like you mentioned, like with the differences in the baseballs from year to year or just baseball to baseball, challenging. And so even guys who are using like sunscreen and rosin, like Glasnow mentioned, and that seems to be, the vast majority of the league, just for the grip, you saw Andrew McCutchen post like the picture of the guy all bundled up in like, padding going to the plate, and just saying this was going to be him going to the plate, just not knowing exactly what was going to happen. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays off. One note of caution, I think there's been a couple people who have mentioned this, and I think it's really important to note, is with the decreases in spin rate, spin rate is also tied to velocity. So make sure that you're also looking at any changes in velocity that accompany that before we start pinpointing people as guys who have been cheating or whatnot. And like mentioned, there's smaller changes that we're seeing and smaller decreases. And so those may be the guys that also are you just using, sunscreen and rosin, and it's not all the same. And it's going to be fascinating to see what happens, but it's also going to be incredibly challenging because, it's going to be just crazy to see what happens over the next weeks. There's so many unknowns about what's going to happen, whether it's going to, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But
like the unknowns of the way they're going to randomly decide during a game to go check stuff. Like, that's how they're telling the umpires randomly go check. Like, okay, that's going to be feeling like targeting. That's going to start a whole nother like dilemma situation there. And then they have to decide when and who to suspend. They're saying it's going to be starting with a 10 game suspension that's paid, but you can't put them on the IL. You can't replace them on the roster. I mean, like other suspensions, you can like basically make them inactive, whatever, and do things. So it's really weird. It's really, really weird. Like, it's going to feel like the COVID IL all over again last year when you like, it'll be a Wednesday and you think you got your guys to start in this week. And all of a sudden he's like, okay, well, that sucks. Like, here we go. And so it's going to be just one of those take the lumps and go, because baseball's screwing it up. It's all like, there's nothing any analyst can tell you right now that's going to make it better. So,
One thing I was thinking about is like, they're going to check gloves and things like that. It's going to be interesting. Like, guys are going to have to get new gloves, like anybody who has any type of substance on there that they're worried about, like They're going to have to get new gloves. They're going to have to get new equipment. Like,
it's what about the catchers? What about the catchers? Because like they have pine tar on their jerseys and stuff from hitting and everything. Like, what if it happens to like they get done hitting real quick and they actually hit their glove, go out, and the ball hits their glove and they throw it back, they chuck the ball. Who gets that one? Like, it's there's so many loopholes and like gray areas. It's gonna be such a disaster. Such a disaster.
And then I see this quote, like there was an anonymous quote from a player in an article today where they were like, you know, nobody's going to change until they come down hard on somebody. Yeah. And so now it's like we got the players being like, oh, we got to make an example of one of the other players, you know, like, and everybody's been doing it, but we're going to decide on like 1, 2, 3, 4 people. We're going to take the brunt of that and kind of have this, this on the record. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be fascinating. I just wish they would have done something, you know,
in the off season.
Just give us, let us know what's happening. There's already enough variables that are changing.
Let us know what the players know. Like, simple stuff. Like, it's not rocket science here, but baseball always makes it like rocket science. On a fun note, our buddy D-Mindy likes to know, Toby, are you wearing the Blue Jays hat as a part of your apology tour?
Couple things. Number one, the Blue Jay hat, it's awesome. It's just a smooth,
it's a standard smooth hat. It's awesome.
Smooth hat. Nothing to do with me, just a great hat. Number two, you know, the apology tour, it's a shame tour. I want to make that very clear. It's a feeling of shame and embarrassment that I have for missing the Vlad Jr. breakout. I think we're safe in saying that he's breaking out, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, you heard it here first. But you know, I'm trying to make a shift. You know, the shame will continue throughout the season because I can't make up for the bad advice that I gave people. You know, it's part of my process. We all make mistakes, but I'm trying to move into appreciation, you know, appreciation and embracing a generational talent that we have in the game who, I mean, if you just look at what he's doing, it's absolutely freaking remarkable. So let's all enjoy it and have a little fun. And so that's why I have the Blue Jays hat. It's also been a hot minute since I wore this one on the show. So,
yeah, it's a great hat. Great hat. It's one of the favorites that you wear. I'm a big, big fan there. Let's check out some player movements from the past week in NFBC. Some names were picked up everywhere. Some were just some cool names to see if how we feel on them. But the most popular addition was Sammy Long of the San Francisco Giants, added in 331 leagues, as high as 224. That was crazy because two things. He's pitching tonight. He's pitched okay. Gave up a few runs. Strikeouts aren't as dominant as they were in his debut in Texas. Okay. But he's pitched okay. He's not like horrible, horrible. My biggest concern with him was, A, how many innings, because they're going to use a starter or an opener with him, which they did again on Tuesday night. And how long does he stay up for? Like, Logan Webb will be back in a few weeks. Eventually, Tyler Beattie comes back. I liked him. I put, like, keep him honest bids in. I got him nowhere. I have no Sammy Long. But I didn't understand. It seems to be a trend, Toby. I don't understand the logic behind some of these break the bank bids on guys like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think is the key, is just the amount that you're bidding on him. He obviously, there was some really nice things that he did. I mean, he's got both the slider that was really effective, and he's got the changeup that was really effective in one start, though. And I think that's the thing that's really important to think about is, you know, it's one start. And so in such a small sample, you can get these wild outcomes, like 7 strikeouts in 4 innings pitched. And you might be like, well, he earned those because he was really good. Yeah, he was really good, but the BABIP was low. You know, it was, I think he gave up 1 hit out of 7 or 8 balls in play. In addition to that, like, his swinging strike rate, I think, was 13%. His CSW was a little over 30, which is good, right? It's above league average, but it's not like striking out, you know, whatever, 16 guys per 9 innings. So you knew that was going to kind of come back. And I think the one concern that I had with him was just the fastball, and getting strikes in the zone. I think his Z contact was like 94% or something like that, which is really bad. And so again, you know, like, it doesn't mean that he can't be effective, but if you can't dominate in the zone, then you're relying on guys chasing on pitches outside the zone. And as they become aware of your repertoire, as they know that they can maybe lay off of, you know, some of the off-speed pitches, if they're able to do that, then it makes it a challenge. So I still think he was a good guy to go after and to pick up, but it's just the amount of the bids, you know, that we're talking about now. And now we're down to like $400 or $500, right? in a lot of instances. And so if you throw down that $200 bid, that $150 bid, you're talking about losing like a quarter plus of your remaining fab. And we still have, you know, I don't know what it is now, like 3/5 of the season left, something like that. So
yeah, the end of June will be about roughly halfway. So yeah, we're getting around 3/5, something like that. So yeah. It's like, and I think he's, like I said, I think he's a good picture. But one thing you mentioned is in that first start, he lived in the bottom of the zone where he needed either an umpire's help or guys to chase, as you mentioned. When he's in the zone contact, the guy, they were hitting. He wasn't unhittable. So I think people just saw like the one hit, seven strikeouts, like, oh, this kid was dealing. And he was. He was getting affected that day. But it's one of those, like tonight, he's not getting blown up, but the D-backs are hitting him. Like they're like, he just gave up a double off the right field wall as we're talking. He's not fooling people with his off-speed pitches. Like they're in the zone and they're smacking it. So it's, he needs to work a little more on that. I think he'll be good eventually, but the hype train was big. And Alex Thistlewood makes a good point here. He a couple things. He says, "Hey, Bubba, the highest bid in a total of 100 leagues is always going to be what WTF." I agree. 224 is the highest. I saw a lot of triple digits. Period. Like a lot of $100 bids. I saw some as low as like 11. That would have gotten me. I had him as 11 as the highest. I was anywhere from like 5 to 11. So, but most places you were 50 plus. But he also mentions used to refer to the median bid in the main. I don't have access to that, so I can't help when we talk about it. I just use the overall page. But top of my head, I'd say the median bid was probably like 80-ish, 80 or 90, I would assume, off the top of my, just seeing kind of what I saw throughout some people posting stuff. And to me, that was still like, no, not at this point in the season with all the money that's been spent. Not for this guy. Like if you wanted to take a – let's throw this out there. I had a question from Richard Sands. He's a regular listener of the show. He hit me up on Twitter earlier when I tweeted some fun stuff about Luis Castillo because he threw well on Tuesday night. And he said, "I have a Luis Castillo available in a 12-team league. Would you drop Jordan Montgomery for him?" And I basically said, if you aren't like running away in pitching, like if you're not safe in pitching, I would, just because if Castillo turns into at least close to what we expect Castillo to be, he's an ace and you can't find that anywhere else. Like Jomo's good, but we've seen the roller coaster. So my question for you, would you, this is why we're talking about not spending on long. Wouldn't you want to have that $80 to $100 to spend on Luis Castillo than on long? Type thing. That's kind of what the discussion is.
Yeah, totally. And that's the thing, like with rookies, we're kind of, you know, we're just, you know, we're hoping in a lot of ways. And his projection was pretty good on a couple of the projection systems. I think Steamer and the Bat had him pretty highly rated too. So we'll see. In main event leagues, he went in 43 leagues, max of 146, min of 8. So I think your 80 as kind of the median seems about right. You know, and it's still a ton. And then you also have questions about, you know, it's nice that he's coming after an opener, but like you still aren't going to necessarily get the volume that you would get from, you know, like a Castillo is going to be available in a lot of leagues, but, yeah. You know, volume is also going to be really key, I think, as we get further down in the season, because we still don't know what teams are going to do, right? Like our teams that are out of contention, are they going to start sitting, you know, their aces who are pitching really well, just to make sure they don't bump up against that 180, 200 innings pitched after last year, just to kind of conserve them. Even the guys who are competitive, what are they going to do to cut back? So volume is going to become even more important as we go along.
Yep.
But again, I mean, it doesn't mean Sammy Long was a perfectly fine
addition.
Perfectly fine addition. I think it's just a matter of, you know, managing that fab in the right way.
Exactly. Let's have some more fun with it this way. He's way down the list. Probably wouldn't even have got to him. But, you know, Jackson Coar came up last week. He wasn't available in NFBC, got destroyed in two starts. And before he got destroyed, he was the AAA pitcher of the month. Like, he was lights out everywhere. Looked great. He definitely has not looked good the first two. Like, Logan Gilbert didn't look good the first two. He didn't look this bad. But he's gotten better. That's not to say Jackson Coar can't get better. He was picked up in 49 NFBC leagues, as high as 111, and then all throughout. Would you rather have paid, let's say, $80, let's say the median on long, or would you rather put like $2 or $3 out just to see what Coar has and put him on your bench?
Probably Coar. Although, like, thing about him is, you know, he didn't just look bad. Like,
it was really bad. He wasn't striking guys out. He wasn't fooling anybody. It was bad, bad, bad.
Yeah, he was really, really bad. So I didn't even actually put bids in on him, which maybe was a mistake. But I also think he's a two-pitch guy. And you know, I'd read like Eric Longenhagen, I think on Fangraphs, was also talking about Coar and isn't a huge believer in what he's been doing, and felt like, you know, a lot of a lot of what he was doing wouldn't translate necessarily at the major league level. We'll see whether that ends up being the case. But yeah, I mean, that's my general philosophy, is to take those kind of lower end shots at guys versus spending a lot of fab on some. I've had a few like high end bids this year. Shane McClanahan kind of stands out. Like, I spent 200 plus on him in a couple leagues. That's been okay. You know, I mean, it's been fine. Like, yet another fine outing today, like, doesn't help you a ton, doesn't hurt you a ton, but I'm hoping that over the course of the season, he can kind of turn it around. But yeah, you got to take your shots occasionally, but we're getting to that point where there's just so much. There's every dollar starts to count just a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I did the Coar deal. He was like my third or fourth contingent bid on things for like literally a dollar. I got him in a couple of leagues. Like, it was just literally, we'll see what he's got. Like, and Alex makes a good point. He's got the Red Sox this week and the Yankees next week. So we'll see what fun that portrays. But moving on to the next one here, Jake Fraley, outfielder for the Seattle Mariners, went 276 leagues, as high as 131. I'm a big Jake Fraley fan. I'm loving this. He's been an on-base machine. He's showing some power, speed. He's been very, very good since called back up. So I'm honestly not too – I think the bids are fine. I think this is one of those guys you could spend some money on. So I tried to grab him where I could. Couldn't get him everywhere because my budget's kind of limited in certain places. But what's your thoughts on Fraley?
Yeah, I think Fraley's a really nice pickup. You know, I think he's going to play every day with the Mariners. Incredible plate discipline so far. You know, his chase rate was 14%, something like that, at least when I checked over the weekend. When I was doing my fab research, you know, there's some stuff that's not as good. He doesn't have like the highest max exit velo of all time. Their barrel rate was relatively low, at least the last time that I've looked. It could have changed because I know he hit another home run and he's got a small number of plate appearances. But the stolen bases is also key. Like, the fact that he's going to hit some home runs, steal some bases. Mariners are fairly aggressive on the base paths. You know, that's really important, especially when you have, you know, what look like skills that can produce a pretty high on-base percentage, even if the batting average isn't as high. You know, I think that's a really good combination. So he was a guy that I liked a lot. A little disappointed in myself. I mentioned this on the show on Sunday with Scott, but I had him in some bids where I was looking at like shelling down, like throwing down like $20 or so last weekend. And I lowered the bids down like to the kind of $4 range or something like that. And now I'm kind of kicking myself for doing that, especially in leagues where you need some, where I need some speed. So, oh well. But yeah, I really like him a lot.
Yeah. He's a guy that I was on in like the early preseason on best ball DC type drafts. So I was really happy with him. And then like buzz out of Seattle. Well, he's not really going to have a job. He's hurt, all these things. So I kind of waved off on him a bit. So I'm liking him there. So I got stuff stashed away. I wasn't able to get as much as I'd like either in season long, because just didn't have the funds to do it, unfortunately. I did grab him in BARF like 2 weeks ago. So I got him super cheap in BARF a few weeks ago. So that will be nice, because I need all the help I can get.
OBP league too. That's a really nice pickup.
I'm just dying for live bodies there. It's been a rough season. The Atlanta Braves, Tucker Davidson, picked up in 228 leagues, as high as 111. Had a rough go on Tuesday against the Red Sox. He's been pretty good. Second start, he looked really, really good, like much, much better than people thought. Didn't go so well against Boston. He's going to have a second start this week that could definitely change things around. I like the pedigree. He's going to have a spot in the rotation for a little bit. I put some like, you know, $15 to $20 bids on him. Didn't get him anywhere though.
Yeah, he wasn't available in most of my 15 teamers, and some of the 12 teamers, I think I had him pretty low down there. Yeah, I mean, he has looked really good, but again, like, you know, the end zone contact isn't great. And the reason why I go to that so frequently is really like, you know, for me, if a guy can dominate in the zone, that's so important, because it means that he doesn't need to kind of chip away at the edges and have guys chase. So I thought he was good. You know, he's got the solid 12.8% swinging strike rate heading into today. You know, a little bit of, you know, control issues, you know, with the walk rate. I think he's had a little bit of difficulty with the minors with that as well. Some luck, you know, the 188 BABIP heading into today, the 89.7% strand rate. We kind of saw him early. I think he got kind of BABIPed a little bit. I think he gave up, two singles before that Devers home run. And then the following inning, it was like a walk and two singles. So, you know, and so those things happen. This was always a really tough matchup. I think he's got, can't remember. Does he have, is he easy or tough at the second half of this week?
Let me check for you.
He's got St. Louis. This was one of the reasons. St. Louis has been really good against lefties, or the last time I checked, they had been really good against lefties so far this year. A lot of right-handed bats in that lineup, you know, Goldie and Molina and DeJong and a couple switch hitters. So Arenado, thank you. I'm missing like the big one there. So I wasn't that into him, mostly because of what the starts were looking like. I mean, going up against Boston, honestly, like Boston and Toronto are kind of on my no-go list at this point in time. Even though sometimes you'll get burned doing that, I think more often than not, you'll end up on the safer side of things. So, yeah, but he was fine. You know, some skills, some interesting skills there.
Yeah, Boston, Toronto, Houston are like the no-go zones for me. You know, Gibson threw well on Tuesday. He got the job done. Eovaldi threw well on Monday, but it was one of those like, I can't do it. It's wild stuff. What's going on?
I cannot understand. Kyle Gibson, I know that there's like a Kyle Gibson crew that has been very interested in him. And like, I just can't understand, because it's like he hasn't even had easy matchups recently.
Yeah, and he's done great. Like, you look at his game logs, it's like, what the world is going on here?
I mean, he's got a 234 BABIP. He's not giving up any home runs. He's got a 13.1% K-minus walk, though. He's got like a worse K-minus walk than league average, probably. I mean, it's just, these are the guys that crush my soul, because it's just like, and when they're on your team, it's great, but it's just like, there's no reason for this. There's reason for him to be pretty good, but like, I got to look at his game log and look at some of these starts he's had. I mean, today it was Houston, you know, who was it recently? He's had three great starts against Houston now. That's what it was. He's had three great starts against Houston, you know, shutting out the Rays on the road, which they're one of the best, most high scoring, you know, teams on the road. Even the Giants, I mean, haven't been easy. Minnesota, Boston, White Sox.
Yeah, it's like, not it's murderer's row if he could sign.
And he's doing it. I mean, good luck. Good luck.
I can do. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop there, but pretty soon with everyone hitting the IL, I can't wait anymore. He's going to throw him out there.
At a certain time, he's going to give up like 9 earned runs in one inning. It's not going to matter. His ERA is still going to be like 3. Exactly. You know? So
he's going to be the reverse Gomberg. Gomberg got it out of the way early. Gibson will get it late. It's going to be one of those deals.
If you remember, Gibson gave up like 8 runs in one inning in his first start of the season.
His debut. I think it was Gibson. They were in Kansas City as Gibson versus Keller, I think.
Opening day.
I remember stacking that game, and it was a great start to the season because it just bombs away from both sides.
Five earned runs in one third of an inning. Since then, his number of earned runs given up 0-1-0-1-1-3-1-2-1-0-2.
That's outstanding. Outstanding. Can't make that stuff up.
Yeah.
Kyle Gibson, everybody. Kyle Gibson. All right. Next guy we'll talk about here for the Detroit Tigers. I know you had interest in him this week. Jose Cisnero. He was picked up in 168 leagues as high as $72. It's always a revolving door. Michael Fulmer is back from the IL. He did not close on Tuesday. Gregory Soto got the close on Tuesday. But you have Soto. You have Cisnero. Maybe you get Fulmer again. What was it in Cisnero that got your attention?
Yeah, I was invested. I bid a couple of $20 bids on him, just places where I'm desperate for closers. You know, it was funny. It's one of those situations where sometimes you pick up guys because of the situation, and sometimes you pick them up because of the skills, right? And with him, I actually was just like, okay, it looks like he's getting closing opportunities in Detroit. I'm going to run with this. I'm going to try to pick him up where I need this type of player. I actually have Soto in quite a few places right now. So I was really happy to see him get the closing job. I almost dropped him, but I was like, they really seem to want to go to Soto.
They keep giving him chances.
Yeah. And I looked into Soto recently, and actually the walk rate has dropped a pretty good deal. The swinging strike rate's up. He's throwing the slider more. The velo's also up. So I didn't really do the due diligence on Cisnero. And then when I was preparing for the show on Sunday, I looked him up, and he's actually been pretty bad. If you look at him recently, not results wise, but skills wise, he's throwing the sinker more often, the four seam less. The velo is up, but he's just not getting swinging strikes. He's not getting strikeouts. He's walking a decent chunk of guys. So he's kind of looks a little bit like a ticking time bomb, honestly. But, you know, I really feel like, you know, Detroit, I'm hopeful that Soto can run away with that gig now, because I do have him in quite a few places. And, you know, having Cisnero and him on a few teams is kind of a little bit of an insurance policy, although I didn't expect Fulmer to come back so quick. So
neither did I. I thought he was out for a while, and I saw he got activated. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That was a surprise.
Honestly, it's all luck at this point when it comes to closers. That not like saying that other people don't have skill, but on my perspective, like, I've just been so off, like, throughout the whole season on who's going to get the next gig or who's going to pitch well this week. Like, I'm just like, just throw it all at the wall, and I'm just hoping that one or two of these guys stick at some point.
Yeah, it's like there was a discussion, a Twitter thread. It was Rob Silver, Scott Jensted, Zach Waxman, and then I jumped in there to give my two cents that they didn't care. They didn't ask me for, but I gave it anyways. And it was Zach asked, you know, what am I going to do with Soria? Blah, blah, blah. Not to mention that D-backs just aren't winning baseball games, period. So it's tough to save a game when they're not winning. But it got our discussion of, you know, we have the theory, or at least some of us do, that even bad teams get saves, and that's true. It's very, very true. You're going to get a handful of saves. At the same time, there's bad teams with committees, which make it even harder to get saves. So that's where it gets tough. It's one thing if you're a bad team. Like in the old days, you could still take the Royals, and they had, what, Montgomery closing or something, whatever his name was. Like, they always had, like, just that one dude. He's going to get, like, 30 save chances. Okay, cool. But now you look at these bad teams, they have so many options, like the Tigers. It's almost to the point where if Cisnero and Soto are both healthy, you just pick one and you ride. You just ride, because it's going to be one week, it's going to be this guy gets two saves. This week he gets none. It's just kind of, it's going to be a revolving door. It's kind of like the Giants. They're not a bad team, but Rodgers and McGee, it hasn't even made sense lately. It really hasn't. Like, McGee got the save the other night. Rodgers got like two before that. They were both on full rest last night when McGee got the save. It was all right-handed batters coming up. There was no rhyme or reason. Yeah. Like, I thought, like, I literally pulled my app up. I'm like, oh, Rodgers. Wait, no. Okay, McGee's in the game. Like, there's no rhyme or reason to it anymore. Don't know what to tell you. So, moral of the story, if it's a bad team or a committee, just kind of pick your gun. And, like, you at least have both of them in case something happens, which makes sense at this point in time in the season. But, yeah, it's a mess. It's an absolute disaster. The Los Angeles Angels, yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say, it's so hard to time too. Like, you think about earlier this year, the Giants is like the perfect example where it's like early on this season, I mean, McGee was just crushing it, right? And all of a sudden he starts to struggle, but his numbers are still pretty good, right? Like, his whip right now, I think, is 0.95. And then you have Rodgers, who hadn't given up any hits, hadn't walked anybody, but wasn't really striking guys out. So then the Giants shift. And then regression comes for Rodgers, right? He gives up whatever hit after hit after hit after hit, because, you know, regardless of who you are, you're going to have a reasonably high BABIP. Right. And especially when you're that high of a ground ball pitcher. And now McGee, you know, looks like he's, again, pitching pretty well. He's giving up homers because he gives up a lot of fly balls, but he's got a better whip now than Rodgers does. Yeah. And so now they're shifting over to McGee, and it's kind of like, all right, use the hot hand, but also part of this is like, figure out who the best guy for the gig is. And unless you see changes in like the skills or what they're able to do, understand that there's going to be the up and down. But because of the team philosophies now, like, that's just not how they're doing it. They're going to use the highest leverage guys, and they're going to mix and match. They don't feel committed to like any one guy. And that conversation was, you know, it's super true. It's like right now, more than anything, you want to get teams that stick with a closer.
Yep.
You know,
it's hard to find right now unless it's one of like the big, well, like 10 or 11 guys. Like, even, well, Jansen gets most of the saves, but that's because it's more of a rest thing. But like most of these guys, there's a handful of teams. We did it before in the season. Like, we felt comfortable before the season started, I think, with what, eight teams maybe? Like, okay, these are the eight teams. That means 22 teams are going committee, it looked like, to start the season. And yeah, it's been a headache ever since. So we'll have to wait and see. And with Rodgers, I will say this. It's not just me being a homer defending him. I've watched a lot of his saves. And I said it before a long time ago. I said he's not going to strike guys out. It's going to be ground balls. They're going to have to get a lot of singles to score runs. That Giants defense has been atrocious behind him. Mm-hmm. I have seen them just butcher plays and make bad throws. There's the one Cubs game on a Sunday or whatever, or Saturday. He almost blew a three-run lead, and it wasn't even his fault. Like, that's why Longo's hurt. He ran into Crawford on a ball that he should never even have tried for. Like, it was just such bad defense. But that's just a whole other story that really, really annoyed me about that, because it all goes on Rodgers' ledger. And then I see guys tweeting out that Rodgers is like, that game, like, literally should have been three batters, three up, three down. That was just, there was one ball that left the infield, and they scored two runs. It was dreadful. So, yeah, that's just me venting. All right. Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, 164 teams picked up, $112 max bid for Patrick Sandoval, coming off that big, you know, 30-plus whiff game. Then on Sunday, he threw a decent, quality start, looked good, nothing crazy. So people are taking chances because, hey, we need guys. And Sandoval at one point in time, like a year or two ago, was pitching well enough. He was a fantasy viable player. So I think people are kind of, some might have rekindled some flames there. What were you thinking when you saw Patrick Sandoval? Because I didn't get him anywhere, but I like the guy. Again, he's another guy that I do have like in late rounds of best balls. Like I have him on rosters.
Yeah. No, I think of all the guys that went this week, he was the guy that I was most interested in. I actually, you know, I don't know if he was available in my leagues or what, but I seem to have just like missed on him, or I didn't have a lot of guys to drop, which I'm lucky enough at this point. But with Sandoval, the thing that I really like, I mean, number one, he's got the dominant pitch. I mean, the changeup is absolutely elite. It's the pitch that he's throwing the most, has like a 30% swinging strike rate. I mean, it's just ridiculous. He's also got, I think it's slider. That's a pretty good pitch as well. The fastball isn't great. He struggles with control, but you know, he's got that ceiling, I think, that upside. In addition to the fact that he has over 50% ground ball rate, I believe still, because of that changeup, because I think maybe he thinks he throws a sinker more than a four seamer. I should check that out right now. But yeah, so I really liked him a lot. I thought of all the kind of pitchers that were available, he was kind of the cream of the crop to go after, because I think I can see there's definitely a pretty big floor because of that control issues. Can definitely see him having a couple outings where it's like two innings, four earned runs, you know, just one of those just really laborious, outings. But then you can also see him having, you know, that seven inning, 10K, 10 plus K type of outing that not everybody is capable of doing. So I really liked him a lot. You know, the six man rotation is a little bit difficult, but I think at this point with pitching, it's like, you can find a guy that's pretty decent. You got to roll him out there, even if it's every six days. So I was thinking, how about you?
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I didn't get him anywhere because I was trying to be super frugal this week. I'm really trying to. Similar to you, I'm fortunate now. Early in the year, I had tons of red suitcases. Now it's not as many. There's still some, but it's like I'm trying to still leave some flexibility with my bat so the pitchers I have available aren't really droppable on most leagues. So it's kind of like, okay, well, I'll put some bids out and see what happens, but nothing really went flying in that regard. So I didn't get him there. I do like him, though. I like a lot of things you said as well. Like he has the pitch mix that can play. He one thing I like about him a lot, like we talked about Coar, we talked about Long. Sandoval's going to be in that rotation, barring something crazy happening. He's going to be there. Like, would Long get demoted after tonight, for all we know? Like, it's just, it wouldn't shock me. I think he'll be here for another start or two, but nothing would shock me there. Like, he should, he could go back. You have a few other two. So, like that was kind of all. Yeah. What was that?
I was going to say, is Bundy going to stay in that rotation?
Bundy can go too. But with Sandoval, the other thing I like about him a lot is he can go 100 plus pitches. Like we know he can go. These other guys kind of bait him. Sandoval's good. Like he's stretched out. He's ready to roll. So that, like you talked about needing innings and just quantity, like he can get you quantity. So fan of that as well. Oh, and Bundy, yeah, that's a whole nother. That got Twitter tilted pretty good last night. Oh boy, let's talk about a renaissance. In a way, Sandoval was a renaissance, but Miguel Andujar picked up in 156 leagues, as high as 137. I grabbed him in Tout and a couple other leagues because I'm just going to ride the hot wave while I could. I got him where he's cheap. I didn't spend a lot of money on him, but the dude's got the power going right now. He's not walking at all, but he has like two walks. But he's not striking out as much as he used to. He's hitting for average. He's playing every day in the outfield. The Yankees need fresh bodies because they're just dreadful right now. So I'm going to ride the hot hand while I can. I'm ready for the other shoe to drop with Andujar. I'm very aware of this. Like I don't expect this to last, but I'm going to ride it while I can. So I get adding him. I would have rather have had Fraley 100 out of 100, but Andujar to me was a good kind of alternative pick if you had to have one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think what you mentioned makes sense. I mean, he's solid. Like we've seen him go through really good stretches before. I mean, you know, he had a ton of prospect pedigree, a lot of ground balls, you know, high home run per fly ball rate. And the Statcast data isn't necessarily jumping off the page, but it's pretty solid. But I think the nice thing is he makes a lot of contact. And so whenever you got a guy who makes a decent amount of contact, who has some power, you know, that's a really nice combination to have, even though, the, yeah, like you mentioned, the walks, like play discipline is awful.
Not his friend.
So it'll be interesting, you know, as that lineup gets a little bit more healthy, whether he sticks on there, but you know, just in terms of guy to pick up for short term, I think, you know, he's a nice little add. And we know that the Yankees offense at some point in time is going to heat up. You know, they're not this bad. They've showed glimpses of it. You know, they're going to go in on a stretch where they just absolutely crush 1 month. And so, you know, if he's a part of the team when that happens, it could be a real boom.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So like the Andujar addition, if you can get him still, if you're in need of outfield help, because outfield's been pretty weak lately. So I don't mind streaming him. Just treat him like you're streaming a pitcher with Miguel Andujar. Enjoy it while you can. Drop it when you need to. Dan Vogelbach was a hot commodity this week, and rightfully so. I know you were targeting him. I had him put in a lot of bids. I got him in a few, not in others. He started every day because Keston here is gone again, at least most days. He's on the strong side of the platoon, if anything. The power's there, and four games in Coors Field with that big man is a beautiful thing. He already went deep on Monday night, so he's already pretty much paid off for a lot of bidders. But he went as high as $49. I know you liked him a lot, so why don't you let everybody know what it was with Vogelbach that you saw?
Yeah, I mean, it was really the schedule. You know, he's got three games to start off with against the Reds. All three are against right-handed pitchers. Then he's got four in Coors. You know, only one of those is against a lefty. So he should play 6 out of 7 games, all really nice, ballparks, playing 3 at home and then 4 on the road. And he's Dan Vogelbach. The batting average is not going to be great, but he's still got some pop. He's got really good plate discipline. He's going to be on base. And so you're just hoping that you get it. And, you know, he hit that first home run in his first at bat of the week and felt pretty good. I would not be surprised to see one or two more this week. And that's really what I was going for. Like that was it. He'll be off my team after this week, unless he's got, you know, some other really nice matchups coming up. But and also with Travis Shaw getting injured, Hiro demoted, he really has that job all to himself. So really looking forward to this week from him. And I think this is kind of what I like about this time of the year in Fab is there's a lot less big names, those big expensive guys to go after. It's much more about trying to identify these types of guys that from week to week can help carry your team a little bit or contribute in areas where you need it. And so hopefully he does that. You know, he didn't do well today just because Castillo is lights out, you know, undeniably an ace.
Ran into a
juggernaut for sure. A juggernaut who now probably has an ERA under 6, maybe.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It is under
is
6.
It?
Yeah,
what
it's
is
like
it?
Five, it's like 5.93.
Because
I went and looked at his stat line, and they always had the updated ERA at the very end, and I was like, oh, yes.
Chipping away.
He's going to finish the year at like 4.3, and that's going to be the best 4.3 ERA.
Oh, man, the best 4.3 you've ever got. Because I've got him with like Shane Bieber in a couple leagues. And, man, I really need him to step up for sure. So,
no doubt. Yeah, because Giolito seems like he's turned things. I have a lot of Giolito Castillo teams. We talked about it. I know you have some as well, and some like we had some other listeners, very same boat. Gio seems to have – he still has a few hiccups that question me, but overall he's figured it out. Castillo, if he gets there, I can get those two guys for 4 months, I'll be very, very happy. Joey Votto, this is a guy we talked about a lot at the end of draft season as like late-round picks, corner infield stuff, deep leagues. He got picked up in 148 leagues for as high as $91. I even had people asking me after Fab, like, what do you think about Joey Votto? I'm like, guys, I know you don't listen to everything I do, but that was one guy I banged the drum for a lot towards the end of the season. Like when we did our recap shows, articles, you name it. I think he's a great corner infield option that was basically free in drafts. He's come back from the IL. He's played 7 games. He's hit safely in 5 straight now. I don't know what he did on Tuesday, but he has 3 home runs. He's still walking a ton. He's playing great. And if you need a corner infielder or a first baseman, he's going to play almost every day. You ride that wave. Votto still has – he's not going to be the average guy. We talked about it, but the power will be there. That Reds team will put up a lot of runs in Great American Small Park during the summertime. So I think you grab him wherever you can right now, especially in 15-teamers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's going to be a real key part of if my teams do really well. I picked him up in all 3 of my online championships, or at least the 2 that I didn't have him, I think, already. Him and Ross Stripling I had, like, in every single one because Ross Stripling next week has – a start at home against Miami, or no, on the road at Miami, I think, and then at home against the Orioles for a two-step. And he's been pitching a lot better. Velo's way up. And so with Votto, like, yeah, I mean, I think he's hitting really well. Like, you look at the Statcast data, the max exit velo is really nice at 113. Barrel rate's really nice, above 12%. The batting average is not going to be what it used to be, like you mentioned. You know, but a 237 batting average with that, you know, in today's game, like, that's like better than the league average.
Yeah, he's at worst, he's a league average batting average guy. Tons of pop. And obviously, OBP still stands tall. Like, he's still beautiful there. Wow. So
beautiful.
Yeah, he's getting, and even with his age and everything that goes, like, all the shuffling in Cincinnati, they still hit him like fourth every day. Like, he's just, they pencil him in there. So he's sitting right in the beautiful spot in a very good line. Like, he's right behind Winker and Casty. And now India's leading off and getting on base at a ridiculous clip.
Yeah, India.
Like, ever since he started leading off, I wrote about it this morning in one of my articles, and I was like, geez Louise, like, it just popped off what he's done since the nine games since leading off. It's amazing what happens when you put a guy like Winker and Casty behind you, so the guys have to throw you fastballs because they don't want to walk you. The kid's raking now. So this Reds team, they're going to be a force. They can get any semblance of pitching from Castillo, and maybe Gray comes back from the IL. This isn't like this is a fantasy show, but the Reds could be sneaky interesting in that Central Division as the summer goes on. That offense is legit. We'll go over a couple more. Speaking of the Reds pitching, Vladimir Gutierrez, he made his fourth start on Monday, got picked up in a 147 leagues, as high as $75. He's given up no more than two runs in every start, and he's gone at least five innings in every start, six or more Ks in the last two starts. I've seen a lot of mixed reviews on the Twitter about him. You know, he's got a 2.74 ERA, but a 5.22 xFIP. He's got 10 walks in his 23 innings to go with his 19 Ks. When you dig in on a guy like Gutierrez, when you look at his numbers and everything, are you a believer or not? Because he seems to maybe be getting a little better each start now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the case. It could be that he's getting better, that he's improving. I mean, yesterday's start was certainly, you know, the best that he's had. I'm going to check out whether he's got any increase in velocity or anything like that as he's gone. No, it's gone down. You know, I just don't see it. You know, I don't see it. Like, what I see is a below average swinging strike rate, a below average O swing, right around league average, slightly below Z contact, which is good to have that. But then a 206 BABIP, an 82% strand rate, you know, a 9.5% K minus walk, 0.78 home runs per nine. You know, I don't see the makeup or what, you know, he can really do. Like, he's not generating a ton of ground balls. I think at this point he's just gotten a lot of fly balls instead of line drives. And, you know, so I expect him to run into one of these, like, one or two innings pitched, five or six runs given up, and all of a sudden he kind of looks pretty similar to the pitcher we anticipated. The slider does look decent. That's the one thing that I'll say is, you know, 19.7% swinging strike rate on it, 75% Z contact, 44% O swing on that pitch. So maybe it could be that, you know, maybe he was throwing the slider a little bit more in his last outing, which I'll check out right now. You know, that could be a road to success, and certainly the Reds aren't afraid to throw a guy more. Yeah, so he threw it about 25% of the time, the most of any outing so far. So he does have a pitch that could get him there, but, you know, at this time I would be really worried about a blow up happening at some point soon.
Yeah, I have no shares in him because I could not get a read on him at all. The more I looked at him, I just couldn't lock in anything that made me feel all warm and fuzzy. So have no shares of Gutierrez, but he did pitch good on Monday. I'm just curious because, like I said, a lot of, like, you're either all in or you're all out all over Twitter. It's pretty entertaining watching the love for him. Any other guys that were on your radar that you made some moves on this past week in the NFBC?
The only thing that confuses me is whenever I see his name, I see Vladimir Guerrero.
Yeah, I want to say it every time. And I will mention, like, we won't talk about these guys, but Max Stassi should be on everywhere. I'm just, please do that. Yeah. And Bobby Bradley is, like, definitely a guy to – either add or watch very closely because he'll be added by the end of this week. But yeah, he had another home run on Tuesday. Today. Like, he's not just power, which is what, like, everyone talked about. He's hitting for average right now, which we'll see how long that lasts for. I get it. His BABIP's through the roof, but he's looked like a brand new man compared to the guy we saw come up last year and everyone was all pumped for and didn't do anything. He looks really good right now. So,
yeah. The only other guys that I added, I added Ross Stripling. I mentioned him. He's looked really good recently. You know, the results haven't been as good, but I really like him, what I'm seeing from him, especially in the velocity department. Caleb Smith was picked up a lot last week, I think, so I won't touch on him. But it wasn't a really active week. I think it was my least active week so far. You know, yeah, nobody really. I mean, one guy that I do like that may be available in 12s is Luis Urias.
Yeah, I was about to say, he just got activated. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's looked really good from just a batted ball perspective.
And he's been leading off.
Discipline skills, batting leadoff. Now with Shaw with the shoulder injury, he's really got, you know, a role in that lineup regardless of what's happening. So he's another guy that I think I may have added.
I added him in a lot of places last week when Wong got hurt, because I figured he'd go there, and he's got like two or three position of eligibility. So yeah,
he's got second, short, and third.
Yeah, now with Shaw going down, that just locks him in even more. Like you said, his batted ball skill is actually very, very good. And if he's leading off, it's even obviously better. So, yeah, I'm with you there. If he's available and you need some depth, even if it's just depth on your just bench, because the injuries are going to keep coming, folks. So the option to have that guy that can play second, short, third, multi, or middle infield, corner infield, you take advantage of something like that.
So. For sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. It was a very light week for me, too. Like I said, I got some Jackson Coar for like a dollar. I got some Trevor Williams for like $2. I literally, none of my main bids went anywhere. I was all like contingent bids because Trevor Williams was supposed to be back this week. They pushed him back one more week, so he's got a two-step next week. And originally supposed to be like midday Sunday, he had a two-step this week. And that got moved to a one-step as of late Sunday. I'm like, okay, I'll still take the one start against the Mets. That's fine. And now he's a two-step come next week against Cleveland and the Dodgers. So it's like a good and a bad. So we'll see how that goes. But I might not even use him. But again, it was $2. It was speculative. Just do some stuff to churn and burn and see what happens. But yeah, very light week for me as well. But go check out the players that got added this past week. There's some good names on there that might be sitting around, at least in a 12-team league for you, that you can take advantage of. Like a Brendan Rodgers got added in like 70 leagues. He's still playing every day, even with Story back. And the kid is good. Prospect pedigree is there. Seems to be hitting. So just keep an eye on guys like that. That's what I would say. And Alex Thistlewood makes a great point. Like with all the negative news we get for injuries, we got good news on Monday. Eloy Jimenez was cleared for baseball activities. And I know I was being optimistic, and Derek Rhodes like kind of slowed it down a little bit, very nicely, of course, unlike most things on Twitter. He like was nice about it. But even if we get him back in, say, August, and we get anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks of Eloy Jimenez, that's a beautiful thing. That's because he was supposed to be out all year. That's pretty much like maybe a little September, but he was pretty much done. And the idea that we can get 6 to 8 weeks of Eloy, because he was dropped everywhere because the reports were he was done. So Alex says save some money for Eloy. Keep that in mind. Maybe not this week or next week, but maybe All-Star break. Start throwing a little Eloy out there to see what happens. So we shall see.
Yeah. One guy that I did I forgot I went heavy on was Spores.
Spores on, close it for Kansas
on the City. Rangers. Yeah.
We just blew it.
We just blew a save, apparently. Blew a save and a Kyle Gibson win. So yeah. But I just thought that he was kind of next guy up just based on how they were pitching, and his skills have been really good. I mean, he's got like a 25% K minus walk, I think, this year. Yep. Strike out a lot of guys. He struck out two in his inning. He only gave up one hit, but it was a Carlos Correa home run. So,
yep.
Oh, well, it happens. Hopefully he gets the next shot too. And, you know, with Kennedy likely being traded at some point during the season, he wouldn't be a bad guy to have in case he gets moved on. Cause the Rangers have been one of the teams that have stuck with a solid closer the whole time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's take a couple listener questions. Cause we have a couple listener questions. Sammy Reed kind of has a tongue in cheek comment, but it's an interesting one. Do you have a list or spreadsheet of recent biggest spin rate gainers, i.e. pitchers who are likely to be impacted the most by spider attack restrictions? I don't know if Toby does, but Eno Saris does at The Athletic. So I go check that out. That's my two cents.
Yes, I do not. I don't, but I just read what other people do.
Yeah, give me 2 seconds here, because when I see articles I like, I mention this on Twitter, I will email them to myself. So I read them at a later date and time. And let me find this one. It was a SpinRate article I saw on Sunday, because Mike Curlin quote tweeted it, so it got on my vision. Ryan Venancio, good Twitter follower. He works at nextondecks.com. He wrote a spin rate report. I look at recent MLB spin numbers. He did like 30 pitchers. So if you want to go look at something else there, he's got a list of 30 pitchers as well. So Eno's got his, but if you want to help the little guys out, Ryan's got you too. He's doing some good work. So go check out the goods there. So there you go, Sammy.
We have breaking news, Bubba. I don't know if it's really breaking news, but
Flat
Jose Altuve just hit a walk-off grand slam off of DeMarcus Evans.
This isn't a victory lap show, but the Altuve 10th round stuff is looking
good. I wish I had more of him. I have him on my most important team.
Tommy Baez in like the 8th or 9th round.
Yeah.
Those are looking good. Even though I have Javi on my bench this week because he was out Monday with an injury, and they said he'd probably be out for another day or two. He comes back today and goes yard, so that's fun. I'll bring him back on Friday. Then he plays it for the weekend. Gilds has a question for you. Which Vlad jersey should I be ordering, powder or royal blue?
This is I like the powder. I like the powder. Yeah, I like the powder blue. Yeah.
It goes well with that hat.
Yeah. And shout out to the Gilds. He posted how he's doing so far in the main events and online championships. I know he's winning. I'm in an online championship with him, which is like it's got Vlad Sedler and John Fish in it as well. And he's winning that one, and has a really good team, but he's winning like a lot of his leagues. So shout out to him.
I saw him tweet something out the other day with his rankings. Maybe it was a week or so ago. He's kicking butt right now, big time.
Totally. Yeah. So shout out to him. I mean, everybody who's doing super well this year, it is very, very hard. It takes a lot of skill, and kudos to you.
Yeah, I've been saving I don't want to show anything of where I am because I'm just waiting for the bad stuff to just go because it can unravel so fast. So we're having fun right now and hoping things keep going.
That's why I post when I'm doing really poorly because when I'm like doing mediocrely, then it looks like, oh, wow, look, you're doing much better.
Yeah, only one place to go but up, right?
Yeah. There you go.
I'm with you there. Freed at Freed Minds asks, thoughts on Soto and realistic expectations for rest of season. I'm assuming
Juan.
That's what I'm assuming. And I'd say he's like one of the best players in baseball. I want to say like third or fourth, but he could be first. He could be fifth. There's so many good players. I'm not worried about him. I know people are worried about him. I'm not worried about Juan Soto.
Yeah. I am not worried about Juan Soto either. I mean, I think a good thing to do is just to check out the rest of season projections. I think that's a really good thing to do just to kind of check what your ideas are or like what this small sample we have so far, what they've been able to do, how that impacts what the projection systems see moving forward. And actually Eno in the most recent Rates and Barrels had a really good, him and Derek Van Riper had a really good discussion just about kind of regression and how it's baked into projections and things like that. But just to give you a sense, I mean, the Bat X has Juan Soto hitting 304 with 22 home runs, 65 runs, 63 RBI, and 7 stolen bases in the rest of the season, which gives him about a line of, probably 285, 30, 100, 90, and 8. So a really good season, not necessarily a Soto season, but a really good season. And essentially what it just means is he's expected to be really, really good moving forward like he was earlier on this season, but he's already performed under what, a lot of people I think were expecting, what the projections were expecting. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to overperform moving forward, but it means that, the true talent level is still incredibly high.
Yeah, we've got to get to the point now where people are thinking guys are disappointments and everything. It's like, as much as it sucks because you had them on your roster for 2 months, you just got to kind of forget about things and realize Soto's healthy now. It's going to warm up in Washington. We know that ballpark plays live. He's going to, unless something weird happens, he's going to be Juan Soto the rest of the way. That's all you can focus on here on out. Like we talked earlier in the show, if Castillo can just pitch like close to Castillo for 4 months, that's all we can hope for right now. We can't like sit there and nonstop. Like that's why we joked. He's at 5.93 right now. Yes. Like let's just like you just got to kind of what's done is done. As bad as it sounds, we can't be sitting there dwelling on that. You got to move on and pray for the best. Another listener question in the chat, watching the show with us, Alex Thistlewood with a good one. Listener question, preference between Austin Hayes and Harold Ramirez. I know we've talked about both of them in recent weeks for fab stuff. Austin Hayes got reactivated from the IL a couple days ago. Good ball player. I think I still have Harold Ramirez over Austin Hayes, but both very good. Like, it's close. What about you?
Yeah, I want to say I would have – I mean, it depends on what you need.
Yeah, Hayes is your power guy. Ramirez is your average guy. Like, that's where I see it.
Hayes is going to get stolen bases. So let's see. So Hayes has played in 4 of 5 games since returning from the IL. He's hit fifth in all of those games. And then Ramirez has been playing pretty much every day in the middle of that lineup.
Yeah.
So I would say if Hayes is playing every day, then I would lean Hayes just because I think he brings the speed, which Ramirez doesn't necessarily, or hasn't in the past, I should say.
He probably won't.
And there's some limit to what Ramirez can do in terms of power just because he has such a high ground ball rate, 53.4%. Also doesn't have great plate discipline either, but makes a lot of contact. So I think both of them in 15 teamers are really solid. I think Hayes, I would probably prefer a little bit just because of the speed. And I think the context is better with the Orioles just playing in that ballpark.
Yeah,
so I might lean Hayes in that instance, but I also think you need to monitor the outfield and how they utilize the outfield with the Orioles. Because I think Ramirez at this point in time has a little bit more locked in playing time, and there's a little bit more competition in the Orioles outfield for Hayes.
100%. That's a big part of it, too. Like Ramirez, barring something weird, he's not going anywhere. Where Hayes, you have Santander, you have Mullins, you have Mountcastle, you have Mancini's going to be stuck at first, but you have I know I'm missing one other one. Like there's a few other moving parts there. In Baltimore. So Hayes is good. He's going to get to play, but it's weird because he used to play at the top of the order. And now Mullins has that locked in. And I think even Mancini's hitting second or third. They've been moving that second or third guy around. So that's what moved Hayes down to fifth, where when he was at the top of the order, it was really nice, like beautiful. But yeah, they're both really good ball players. Like to me, it's close. And I like how you broke it down to what your team needs, because that'll kind of separate things out and go from there. But Hayes batting fifth, maybe he turns into more of an RBI guy. We'll see what he does, but could be quite interesting. But Toby,
yeah, Alex Thistlewood is pointing out all our errors on this podcast. I mean, over here, but he does point out that Hayes has 0 stolen base attempts, and when you look at the rest of the season projection, both Ramirez and Hayes are at 2 each. I always thought of Hayes maybe as being a little bit more of a speed guy, but I could be wrong, and that's why it's always really good to check your assumptions and look at the data. So I would say, I still think I probably prefer Hayes because there's a little bit more pop there and the lineup and the situation might be a little bit better, but maybe it's not the stolen bases that really carry it, but they're pretty close.
He's not running much, I would imagine, because he's been hurt a lot this year. He's been on the IL twice, at least twice. So
yeah, I don't have any of him, so I don't know what he was on the IL for.
I'm pretty sure at least one of them was like hamstring related or something like that. So that'll cut down on the steals from time to time. But hey, we'll see. They're both very close. I'm a Harold Ramirez guy, but nothing against Austin Hayes either. Nothing at all. Thanks for all the questions, Alex. Much appreciated. And Toby, that'll wrap us up. We're in the books. Another episode. Fab recap. Listener questions. Listeners are A little slow this week. Summer vacation. I don't know.
People starting to do that football research already. Yeah, guys, it's just June.
Easier fab periods for us, Toby. It's a good thing. Yeah. So, no, scared. But final thoughts before we wrap things up.
I think, just keep plugging away. I was only kind of joking about the football thing. I think a lot of people, this is the time of year that, a lot of people in season long, if their seasons aren't going great and they're not fully invested, then that attention starts to, look in different directions and maybe switch over to football a little bit. And so it's really an opportunity in the next little bit where we can gain some ground, especially like if you're down in the counting stats, if you're down in runs or RBI or even home runs and stolen bases, you can make up a lot of ground in the second half of the season. So don't give up. Keep plugging away, keep that league integrity in place. But if people aren't going to do that, then make sure you're in a position to take advantage of it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like if you're in position, this is the time. We talked about the kind of like limited the bidding coming up. We talked about how we kind of kept it frugal. Like you can do that week in and week out. You're going to be surprised what you start getting. Like you're going to be like, even like the Vogelbox, like Toby said, look at the schedules. We've mentioned it many times. Every time I do Fab, I always have that RotoWire like 2 to 3 week forecast out because it's not just for pitchers. It's literally like, hey, what hitters have these matchups coming up? Like be a week early. If you have the room on your bench, not everybody does right now, be a week early. Start getting these guys nice and cheap. Like Toby mentioned, he got Stripling more so for next week. So you can do things like that. Vogelbach, like Coors weeks are the easiest ones. And a lot of people talk about it, but when you see the bids, not a lot of people bid on it. Like you can, Urias, Vogelbach, there was a lot of Brewers. Everyone looks at the Rockies guys. Like, oh, let's go pick up Daza and Fuentes. Okay, whatever. But they can't hit home runs like Vogelbach and Urias can. Like, let's look at the big picture here on what works. So there's lots of little niche things you can do for very cheap. So keep that in mind as you speculate things and grind on, because it's still a grind. We're almost halfway there. Almost halfway. It's going to be a long one, but it's been fun, Toby. We'll do this again next week. Yep. But check out Toby on Twitter at Batflip Crazy. I am at BD Intric. This was Bubba and the Batflip episode 87. Catch you guys next time.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.